Before her parents began to show visible signs of age, Francine Russo had considered herself psychologically astute. For a decade, she'd advised friends and the readers of her Ask Francine column in Time magazine on the problems they had to cope with in their families and relationships. It was only after her own parents began to need help from her and her sister that she fully understood how big and fraught with obstacles the challenges before her actually were. She shares what she's learned in her book, They're Your Parents Too, which is published by Random House. I'm very pleased it has brought her to our show today. And we invite you a little later to add your comments on our show page or give us a call at 212-433-9692. Hi, Francine.
Hi. It's nice to be here.
Are the relationships between adult children and their parents more complicated today than in the past because people are living so much longer than they once did?
Absolutely. Think about it. A generation ago, our parents' parents got sick. They went in the hospital, perhaps, and then they died. Never before has there been a kind of decade-long reunion where adult siblings have to re-engage intensely over their parents' aging.
But there's another thing that's happened. Aren't adult children in the baby boom generation much more likely to have moved away from where their parents lived to go to find work or to school?
Absolutely. There's a kind of perfect demographic storm here. Parents are living longer. Children are better educated, live further away. Women are working. All of those revolutions that occurred with boomers have all conspired to create parents who need care and children who are not available to care for them.
You've called the stage of life that you focused on in this book the twilight transition. Is that your term?
Yes. Why do you sound?
Somebody else may have come up with it.
No, actually, not only did nobody else come up with it, but I actually believe I'm the first person to have conceptualized it this way. I'm a journalist, not a therapist, and I apologize to anyone if I sound a little too shrinky. I'm just so imbued with this stuff. But I went looking for what happens, a new stage of family life, where the original family gets together again at the end and has to deal with each other again. And I wasn't finding it, so I had to make it up.
Well, would it be accurate to say that this twilight transition describes a shift from a family where the parents are in charge to one where the adult children assume responsibility? Something that I assume that would become difficult for some because, in effect, they're becoming parents of their own parents.
Well, that term is used, but the really important understanding people need to have is that we always respond to our parents as children to our parents, even if our parents have dementia. And what I'd like people to understand is that this isn't just a practical challenge, but a major emotional passage for the family and for everybody in it.
Has any research been done into this?
There's been a lot of research on individual facets of it, and I cover all of the research in my book. There's research on caregiving, research on how favoritism in early life affects willingness to care. Guess what? You're less willing if you're not the favorite. But that doesn't mean you won't end up being the caregiver. But nobody...
I assume that it also means... We also discover that women are more likely to become the caregiver than the daughters rather than the sons.
Daughters are more likely. Women are brought up still to see themselves more as caregivers. But a third of caregivers are now men.
Hmm. We've heard the term sandwich generation, which refers to people who had their children late in life and then end up caring for young children and aging parents at the same time. Do people with young families face an additional set of challenges when they're dealing with their elderly parents?
Well, of course they do. But I think the story that's been missing until now is that person in the middle of the sandwich generally has siblings. And the research shows that the greatest source of interpersonal stress for caregivers is their siblings. And so what's happening with that person's siblings? Are they involved? Are they giving her emotional support?
My guest is Francine Russo, whose book, They're Your Parents Too, How Siblings Can Survive Their Parents' Aging Without Driving Each Other Crazy, is published by Bantam. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopez. This is not totally new because there's a great film, a Japanese film by Ozu called Tokyo Story, in which parents come into Tokyo. And they're getting old, and all their kids are saying, well, why don't you come and stay with us? And then nobody wants them, ultimately, even though they're the sweetest old people you could ever have imagined.
Yes, I mean, people have always gotten somewhat old, and there is also King Lear, but...
Yeah, but he goes crazy.
Well, yes.
And he played favorites.
Yes, well, hey, guess what? Many, many families had favorites. And I do see the King Lear syndrome in some of the families I have seen. So, of course, it's been building gradually, but never before have the siblings had to deal with chronically ill parents for 10 years or more.
Are only children better off than those with siblings?
I'm glad you mentioned that, because only children often express a great yearning, if only I had a sibling. And that sibling is the ideal sibling. And the real irony is that people who have siblings also yearn for that ideal sibling. And they're so angry. They're so pissed off that the brother or sister they've got is not that person that they end up pushing away the sibling they've got.
You've said that you were pretty clueless about how best to deal with your aging parents, and you didn't have a great relationship with your sister, who you knew you'd need to work with in resolving the problems. What had gone on between you and your sister? Is she older or younger than you?
Well, actually, I was even more clueless than that. I didn't know I was going to have to work with my sister. She's younger. She lived near my parents. I had moved far away, which was how I dealt with uncomfortable family dynamics.
And I assumed that she would show up when something went wrong.
Well, she was very actively involved with my parents. And in my family, nobody ever asked you to do anything. They used that old saw, I shouldn't have to ask, which I have found to be so destructive to family. So no one asked me to do anything, and I didn't volunteer. My sister's rage grew, and what I didn't hear was her rising desperation.
So she was resenting the fact that you weren't helping, even though you didn't know that she was resenting it.
Oh, I knew she was resenting
it. Oh, because she was venting? She was calling you and saying, why aren't you here?
No. In my family, what my mother said while she could still talk was, you're never around. You never come. Which is, by the way, how she would greet me when I arrived. You never come. And my sister began inhabiting my mother once my mother could not do that. And she would say, you never come. And her tone became more shrill. But she actually told me later, after I'd apologized for being not so involved, that she didn't want my help. She just wanted me to be in it with her. But that was very hard, as it is in so many families.
Well, how can you be in it with her if you're not living there? Would you have had to have moved?
No, she didn't mean that. She meant emotionally. Mm-hmm. What so many caregivers want is emotional support. They want their brother or sister to call up and say, not just how's mom doing, but how are you doing? Mm-hmm. And I appreciate this, and thank you, and what can I do?
Did you figure that out?
I figured it out after my mother died, and I was much better during my father's last years. My sister, however, who, by the way, had been angry at me since she was born, remained angry at me until about a year after my father's death, when I made a profound apology. And like so many siblings after their parents die, even though we hadn't been close, we felt a real pull toward each other. And a lot of forgiveness came there.
Although often when parents die, there's that added problem of mom wanted me to have this. And so you could have more tensions that way as well.
Actually, in your parents too, I start with, is mom or dad old? Does mom or dad need help? Right through end of life decisions, death, mourning, inheritance, and what I call the sibling generation, which is maintaining connection and reinventing the family after our parents are gone.
Don't many adult children ignore signs that their parents are beginning to fail until they face a major health crisis? Like a fall or sudden hospitalization?
Yes, and also their parents ignore their health problems. The major emotional passage that we're going through here involves dealing with mortality.
And when did it become apparent to you?
When did it become apparent to me? I think after my mother died. And I saw, and after my father died, you know, I saw that what so many people see, my own mortality staring me in the face, which was what so much tension is about, trying not to see that.
Well, in earlier cultures, the taking care of the parents was built in to the whole family structure. And there were large families, extended families, where help was constant. Now, I don't know, how far away did your parents and your sister live?
Three blocks.
Oh. I thought you said you moved away.
I moved away. Yeah. I moved 2 hours away. My sister
Yes,
I moved 2 hours away.
And so it's very different today than it was when everybody lived in the same village or you never left your neighborhood.
Well, yes, but the real challenge is actually adapting the old roles we have in our family to work in very new times, because we all have a role when we're growing up, a big sister, little sister, father makes decisions, whatever it is, and when we get together 30 or 40 years later, they don't work anymore.
We're still relating to them even in the same way we did when we were kids, even though we've had these complicated lives on our own.
It's like one of those comedies that come out every Christmas, Home for the Holidays, everybody acting the way we did when we were 10. Well, that happens only for 10 years and over important things.
Well, I've often read that children can take on a role in the family. There are these standard roles. There's the pretty one, the smart one, the funny one. And those persist into adulthood as well. But how do they relate to dealing with parents?
Well, those roles, those are more kind of labels and image things that we do have in families. But I'm thinking of who makes the decisions, who tends to take the lead. Usually it's an older sister who becomes a caregiver now and gets burned out, and the younger ones are still acting like little brothers and sisters.
Hey, you say families develop an emotional division of labor. That's what you're
talking
about.
That's right. That's right. So that it may be that one child's job is to amuse the parents and be around so that they don't fight. They're very deep things that we're often not aware of.
Is that something that has to be overcome when the parents really need help?
What has to happen is an adaptation, so that, you know, if you're the big sister and you want to control everything now, but your siblings want to take a role because they want to be part of it as well, then you need to let go a little bit.
Well, in your case, it was your little sister who was taking control.
Yes, she was, and that was okay with me. But there were other deeper things going on in our family, that my mother wasn't very loving. My sister had always looked to me for emotional support, but I was so needy myself, I couldn't give it to her. And we duplicated that, unfortunately, when my parents got old.
My guest is Francine Russo, whose book, They're Your Parents Too, How Siblings Can Survive Their Parents' Aging Without Driving Each Other Crazy, is published by Bantam. We will take a little break. When we come back, we will continue the conversation. Also, take your calls. Our number here is 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. You can also leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. We're back with Francine Russo. Her book, They're Your Parents Too, How Siblings Can Survive Their Parents' Aging Without Driving Each Other Crazy, is published by Bantam. And we are taking your calls at 212-433-9692. You can also leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. And let's go to Cindy from Brooklyn. Hi, Cindy. You're on the air.
Hey, I am an only child, and my daughter is an only child, so we don't have siblings around. But how do I get across to my daughter that my husband is having problems with his knee? I have chronic pain. We are going to try to sell our house, get a new dwelling, and she has a 9-year-old, and we feel totally overwhelmed. But we can't. She can't seem to be able to help us. All she can say is, you know, it's up to you, Mom. So
you were expecting your daughter to help you out, and she's feeling overwhelmed by her own life.
Yes.
I sympathize with this, and you know, it's very typical. Adult children are very, very caught up in their own lives, especially if they have their own children. And it's very important for the parents to set a good example of being realistic about their aging and make plans for what they would like. The most important thing is to be specific. Tell your daughter exactly the ways in which you think she could be helpful and ask her whether that's possible. And if it's not possible, then perhaps you can find a paid service or some nonprofit service to help you in those ways.
Thank you for your call. We go now to Natalie from Manhattan. Hi, Natalie. You're on the air.
Hello, Leonard. I have to say this program is terrific. This is right on. I run a caregiver support group. I am not an agency or a social worker, but I was a caregiver. I'm involved in this program. It's a free meeting situation, and everything that this author said is absolutely on target. It's terrific, and I want to thank you for putting this on the air. This is so important that families should know this, hear this.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that, and I do hope that when people read my book, that they will develop an awareness and of how complicated these sibling interactions are and alter their attitude and their approach just a little bit. It can make a huge difference.
And thank you for your call. We go now to, is it Rashid?
And Rashid.
Howard Rashid in Howard Beach.
Hello. Rashid, yes. Here's the scenario. Two children. One moves far away to California. The other one stays in Brooklyn with the parent. Fast forward 20 years later, the parent is ailing, and the one who's local is taking care of the parent. The other one sees the parent once or twice a year. Is it common that the local child feels that they're entitled to a greater portion of the inheritance?
Yes, it's very, very common, but parents typically do not feel this way. Parents feel that, for the most part, and obviously I don't know how your parents feel that when they die, they want to recognize their children equally and that caregiving is a labor of love and usually is not compensated financially.
Well, should they try to understand that there is this other side to the story?
Certainly that position can be made, especially if you, for example, have given up paid work or made other financial sacrifices or are not as financially well off as your sibling.
Thank you for your call. We now go to Katie from Manhattan. Hi, Katie. You're on the air.
Oh, hi, Leonard. Yes, I have a question about the time frame that Francine discussed. And does it change if the time of care is longer? For instance, my parents first got sick when I was 12, so now we're facing all the dynamics she's talking about in terms of the more acute caregiving that's necessary. But in fact, we felt responsible for their health, you know, since I was 12, for the past 20 years. I have two older sisters, and we're all very close in age. The one is still in town, and two of us have moved away. And so the one in town shares the burden of my father's acute care. So I was just wondering about the time frame and how that affects these sibling dynamics.
Well, obviously, the longer it goes on, the more overwhelming it is for the caregivers. And I do want to say that long-distance caregivers can be very supportive if there are things that can be done online, by telephone, if you ask them to come in a couple of times a year or as often as possible. There are ways they can be supportive, including emotionally, that can make a huge difference.
Thank you so much for your call. Mary. Hi, Mary from Mawa.
Hello. This is Manna from Heaven.
And my I thought you were Mary from Mawa.
Manna from Mary from Mawa. Yes, yes. My question is, does this become even more intense, whereas in my situation, I've been the solo parent for 40 years.
Are you asking as a parent who will need care?
Well, I've already decided I better damn well keep myself as healthy as I can. But yes, does the interaction between the siblings, given the situation that eventually I will need care, become, or when I die, become even more intense for children that only have a solo parent?
It can be, or it can bring the children closer together. The most important thing you can do is to sit down with your children and say, if this or that happens, this is the way I'd like to handle it. I'd like each of you to do something, and if someone assumes the larger share, which is typical, then the others must be supportive.
Good.
Okay, thank you so much. Ken from Flushing, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm enjoying the show, even though I find a lot of generalization. This lady is right on target and seems to know her stuff. My sister.
Well, can I ask you a question? How do we avoid generalization unless we're talking about, how deeply do we want to go into Francine's personal life?
No. I mean about the cases, the general public, where they're all different, and yet in some way they're all the same.
True.
So she really hit the mark. But in my case, my question is this. I'm an older person, and Francine is talking about people that have other people. But what if you're alone and you start deteriorating and you don't deny it? You see it coming, and yet who's going to care for you or get involved in your problems?
Well, actually, there are many, many assisted living and places and continuing care places. This is something you need to start doing research into. And you may also want to talk to a geriatric care manager because they can help you find resources.
Thank you so much for your call. Elizabeth from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. Thank you for the show. My question is regarding attempting to bring siblings together to discuss the issues of an aging parent when sort of the parents' denial and those siblings' denial are going on at the same time about the need to do that. My father died about 7 years ago, and we saw all the old family dynamics play out in a way that wasn't very pleasant. And my hope has been to try to get us to talk about things as my mother ages, but I've had a very hard time bringing people together to do that. So I wondered if the author had any suggestions.
Well, I do. And this is, by the way, very, very typical. And you may not be able to get everyone to get on the same page until something happens. But I recommend you get a professional in for an assessment of your mother.
Okay.
And have that person send out a report to each of your siblings so that they can be objectively on the same page. And that report may also have a prognosis, what's coming up, what your mother's needs will be, and then you can start to have that discussion.
Right. Is there anything general like that? Her situation is not such that she's so ailing right now, but I'm wondering if there's any general information just to share with people toward that end.
I'm not quite sure what you're asking me, but there are websites where you can find information on normal aging. I mean, you can do a little research.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you for your call. My guest is Francine Russo, who has written for Time magazine for many years, now written a book based on her own experiences called They're Your Parents Too, How Siblings Can Survive Their Parents' Aging Without Driving Each Other Crazy. We go now to Lisa from New York.
Yes, I'm one of four sisters. I'm third in the pecking order. I recently moved in with my elderly parents to get them organized and help out. My mother is 91. She has dementia. She's a total invalid. What I find most difficult is I am so patient and kind with my mother in ways she was never with me. She had a very demanding career. My sisters say she's just not an empathetic person. So I feel very conflicted about this, yet I can't abandon my parents. But I'm always angry about it.
Well, actually, this is the heart of my book, which is about dealing with our parents in the last stage of their life and making peace with who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds to me as if you are doing what you need to do for yourself, and that as well as for your parents, and that you should take great satisfaction and pride in that, because the reality is that our parents are not always who we would like them to be, and accepting that is part of this stage of life.
Yeah, that's exactly on point. Thank you very much. And just one other thing, I do most of the work. My sisters are not in town, and what you said is so true about I don't need their actual help, but what I do need is their emotional support and that they recognize how much I'm doing for my parents and that they're grateful.
Well, I hope you've told them that.
Yeah, I have.
Thank you for calling. Is part of the problem that the parent is not likely to say thank you either?
Very often parents aren't likely to say thank you.
In some cases because they're not even recognizing what's going on if there is serious dementia.
Well, no one wants to feel like a burden to their children, so they may make light of it. But in the healthiest families, parents are healthy about their aging. They're realistic. They're appreciative. In less well-functioning families, it's worse.
Sometimes, doesn't the sibling who's providing most of the care exclude the others and almost prevent them from helping?
Absolutely. The revival of sibling rivalry can be very fierce during this period, although people aren't conscious of it. I hope my book will make people more conscious of their own motives and understand themselves better, because some caregivers just wear themselves into the ground when part of their motivation is to be the best sibling and to be the most important one. And if they could make peace with not being that, then they could get the help they needed.
Do male caregivers deal differently than female? I'm assuming that that men are more likely to be good at scheduling and making sure certain things are taken care of, whereas the female is more likely to be hands-on.
Male caregivers are less hands-on and usually have hired help or have their parents in a place. But even more important than that, and this divides sisters and brothers a lot, is that women are more brought up to think it's our job to make other people happy, and men are not. And so very often there'll be fights over the sister who goes to see mom 5 times a week at the home, complains about it, and her brother who says, well, don't go 5 times a week. I would never do that. Mm-hmm. So that kind of gender difference does come up.
And then there are the fights over whether mom should even be put in a home or not.
Those are not gender specific, but those are very, very powerful emotions driving those fights.
Bill from New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air. Bill, are you there?
Hi, Leonard.
Go ahead.
Just what a great topic. I'm living the same situation. I have parents who live in the same town that I'm in. My father's 80. My mother's in her late 70s. We have one son who's 13, just turned 13. So my wife and I are in a little conflict about we're updating our wills now and just seeing all that ahead of us. We've also lived an experience with my father-in-law who passed away, and my wife is from Europe. So she was the odd sister out of town, you know, many thousands of miles away. And so it's just a great topic, and I'm just trying to gather as much information here, and I'm looking forward to reading the book.
Well, thank you for calling us. Eugenio, is it Eugenio?
That's right, Eugenio from Richwood, Queens.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I've been away from my family here in Brooklyn for, you know, Brooklyn, Queens area. For about 30 years. So just went through a divorce and stuff. So I said, hey, man, it's a good time to go back home, back to New York. And my sister's been taking care of my mom. She's already hit 80, and she's becoming her hands full. And when I got here, my sister's like, okay, this is what you got to do. You got to do this, you got to do it. And, you know, and I just sat down with my sister and said, look, I'm not into hugging and kissing and getting all this family, you know, mushy stuff. So I told her all I could do is come by a few times a week, take her for a nice walk, you know, whatever she could tolerate, take her for a nice walk, sit down and talk about a plot of the movie and just get to know my mom as a person and not really trying to take care of her.
Yes, well, you know, I hope your sister listened to you, because one of the most important things is that each person should contribute what they feel comfortable contributing. And it may be that your sister may ask you to do other things as the tasks become more overwhelming. And I hope that you also will be willing to do the things that are not mushy.
And thank you for calling us. Gail from Milford. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. As everyone has been saying, about a wonderful show, and I would like to address the issue of the guilt that you feel later. I'm the older sister, but we consciously moved my parents next door to my youngest sister, who did an incredible job, and I went up there as much as possible, but in my mind, never enough. If you could talk about that a little.
Yes, I include a lot of research in my book, as well as the stories of many, many families. guilt is a given in this situation. The child who is doing the caregiving feels guilty that she can never do enough. The one who lives far away feels guilty that she's not helping and that she lives far away. Everyone feels guilty, and a lot of this guilt is not realistic. And we really just have to struggle with ourselves to make peace with what's possible.
We have very little time left, but a number of calls have come in from people who say that they are afraid that they're going to get old and infirm, and there will be nobody there for them.
That's a very hard thing, but, you know, people can find there are places where you can take care of yourself, and more parents do that. And it may be a kind of group home situation or a senior living situation. And I say start looking for that while you're still healthy. And for the older people who are worried about how their children will be around this, I say now is the time to start thinking about this and talking to them and making plans.
Francine Russo covered the Aging and Boomer Beat for Time magazine generation section for nearly a decade. She has also written for the New York Times Magazine, Red Book, Family Circle, The Atlantic Monthly, The Village Voice. And now she has written a book called They're Your Parents Too, How Siblings Can Survive Their Parents' Aging Without Driving Each Other Crazy. It's published by Bantam. And I was expecting all the calls to come in from women, but we got a lot of calls from men.
I'm glad to see that.
Thank you so much for being with
us. It's been a pleasure.